Hello and welcome to another episode of the Selfish Podcast. Today we have Wade Simmons, and I know some things about him from the description he filled in to join into this podcast. And he's a wrestler, he works in a funeral home, and he's into filmmaking. And I'll find out a bit more because I know very little, so I'm excited to hear his story, his journey, his life. But first, Wade, welcome. Can you just share with me and the audience, where in the world are you? What time of day is it for you?
So it is 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm in the United States. I'm in a suburb, like right outside of Chicago.
Oh, nice. I've had a few guests from Chicago. It seems to be there's a lot of people. Well, it's a big city, I know, but it seems to be quite a few people. Chicago's been one of my number one sort of American places that people have come on from.
Oh, nice. Now, that's great to know. I mean, a lot of great, you know, talent come out of Chicago, from basketball players to rappers to movie stars to some everybody.
Yeah, definitely. And thank you for, I don't know, are you normally someone that gets up really early, or did you get up early for the show?
I normally get up early anyway. I'm an early bird.
Okay, nice. Yeah, so what I want to do with my guests, I like to hear their story and their life. And I like to start with their childhood. Can you tell me a little bit about what your life was like pre-10 years old? Like, how was life growing up? What did your parents do? And yeah, paint me a picture of your early life.
Sure. So I was born on the northwest side of Chicago in an area called Humble Park. I went to elementary school on the west side of Chicago, went to church on the south side of Chicago. And for the most part, as a kid, I was into like photography, filmmaking and wrestling, you know, pretty much what I'm doing pretty much now. And then I went to a school called Jensen. I stayed there from what? Like pre-K to eighth grade, had a lot of good friends there. And it was kind of like an elementary school, like where I started like, you know, writing like short stories. Just to bring my video camera to school, take a lot of pictures and stuff like that. So, you know, and also I used to pay some of my fellow classmates to draw like cartoon characters for me and stuff. So I had a businessman already as a kid.
Nice. Yeah. And what was home like? What did your parents do when you was younger?
My mother just was kind of, you know, she didn't really do a whole lot because she, you know, had some things going. But my father, my father was actually an artist, and he did like various jobs, like working at a restaurant and things like that. You know, just things that he had to do to, you know, help out, you know.
Yeah, and do you have a big family? Are you the only child, or you have siblings?
Oh, no, I have two sisters, one brother, and my grandparents also kind of helped raise us, too. So my grandmother actually was a school teacher at the school that I grew up at.
Oh, nice. What did she teach?
She taught, like, what, eighth grade, from fourth grade to third grade. She taught some of everything, and then my grandfather actually, he used to work for like a hair product company, but they left and moved to another state. So then he got another job, like working downtown Chicago.
Okay, so were they also from Chicago, raised there? Like, has your family generations been there for a while?
Yeah, well, my grandmother, yeah, but my grandfather, my mom's actual father, he was from Michigan, but my mom was also blessed with my step-grandfather, who's been, you know, in their life since they were kids, and he's from Mississippi, so I mean, he's pretty much been there for since forever, you know.
Oh, nice. And do you remember when you was a child, like, you said you was doing filmmaking and everything, so maybe that'll be along their lines. Do you remember your first ever sort of dream or ambition or something you wanted to do or be when you was older?
Yeah, as a child, I always knew that I wanted to do two things. It was be a filmmaker, of course, because, again, I was dealing with cameras since I was a little kid, but I also wanted to be a mortician, too.
Oh, so you wanted to be a mortician. So where did that, because that's an odd thing to, I feel like it's an odd thing. I don't know anyone that's wanted to do that or come across a guest that said that. So where did that sort of drive come from?
I think from, you know, growing up in church and going to like a lot of funerals, for whatever reason, I was just always kind of curious about it. Like I'm not fascinated with death or nothing like that, but it was just, you know, for some reason, I always just wanted, you know, to do it. You know, it was almost kind of like it was meant for me to do it, you know.
Yeah, because it's like you said, you don't need to be, say, fascinated with death, but death is one of the, it's like birth, it's one of them guarantees in life. So someone has to help that service.
Yeah, because I know a lot of people would like assume that, most people that want to do that is fascinated with death, but that was never my story or intention. I just, for whatever reason, it just seemed like something that it was meant for me to do as a child. Because again, I remember wanting to do that in elementary school too.
Yeah, and what do you feel was intriguing you? Was it the sort of service of helping others with the passing of a loved one, or was it the sort of behind the scenes? What part interested you the most?
I think a little bit of both. I think, maybe kind of knowing, a little more about what, happens to the remains, and just kind of seeing that it was a job where you had to help people.
Oh, okay, and as far as I'm aware, you work in some way for, I don't know if, whether you call it a funeral home or a funeral company, but you've got a job in that industry and you're making your own film. So how did the funeral side start? When did you start getting your first sort of job and career in that side of things?
So there were a married couple at the church that I grew up at. They were morticians, and they knew that I wanted to do it. And I actually kind of credit them because, they encouraged me to, go to school and everything. And, they were telling me, like, well, when you get yourself together, we probably hire you or this or that. But what ended up happening was while I was in high school, my senior year, I had a teacher. Her name was Miss Anderson. She called the Mr. Spencer Leake's wife, Spencer Leake Jr.'s wife, and she told him, like, "Look, I got a student that wants to be a mortician. One of my high school students. Can you give him a chance?" And he told me, he said, "Show up in a white shirt, a gold tie, a black suit." And I look up now; it's been 11 years since I've been there.
Oh, nice. And still with the gold tie and the black suit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. And so how did that feel once you actually started working there and seeing the process, and has that transformed over time, over 11 years?
Oh yeah, I mean, since I've been there, I mean, it's kind of crazy because, like, when you think about it, like, when you first meet new people, you kind of have to get to know them. But now it's almost like that memory is just so blurred. It's like I pretty much know everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been with them for 11 years, but like the first day, I mean, if I can recall it, it was like I was like very excited to be doing what I love. Of course, it's not, the best circumstance for, the person going through it, but just to be able to come there and help. And then I got to meet so many people and stuff like that. But I mean, for the first few years, I was at the funeral home, and like, because we have two locations now, we have three. But for like the first couple of years, like, a lot of the workers in the city didn't even know who I was. So when they finally met me, they were like, "Well, where you been hiding at?" But I mean, I thank God for being there, though. It's been 11 years, and I mean, it's like time just went by so fast.
Yeah, and how do you find like doing that work and your own sort of processes of death and passing? Because for me, I'll tell you a little story of me personally. Like, I didn't come from a strong religious background. Like, my family were sort of loosely sort of Christian Catholic when I was younger, but as soon as my nan passed, that sort of went away, and I had lots of issues in my family when I was younger, and I felt like I didn't get answers from any religion, so I became like sort of no religion for a long time, and I lost faith, but I also feared death because I didn't have any real strong concept. And then like later in my life I got full of faith and I don't have any fear of death. So what's your process of death, and how's your sort of life in that way, and where your thoughts go and mind goes?
Yeah, so for me, because I grew up in church, and I mean, I also, like, I've done some ministry in my life too, but I've always kind of been a person of faith. I mean, I think everybody's faith gets tested. Sometimes a lot of things happen and we don't understand, but like, I think, like, now getting older, when we kind of look at the state of the world now, and you know, all the wickedness that goes on. I think to me, when people think, when I guess I can't speak for nobody else, but when I think more about death, you know, it makes me realize, like, you know, we're not going to be here forever. But I mean, you know, I think we should be mindful, you know, of how we treat one another. You know, I mean, I do believe in heaven. I believe in hell. You know, but I just think that, like, you know, I look at, like, how God loves humanity. Like, I don't look at death as, like necessarily like a punishment. I mean, I know if, for Bible believers that, you know, it was a consequence of Adam's choice for those that believe the Bible. But I look at it as like, you know, this world that we live in is imperfect, but I feel that we should try to make a big difference in it and have love for people no matter who they are, no matter how they think, no matter what they believe. I just feel like we have to kind of, you know, try to find the light in people, you know?
Yeah, nice. No, well said. Yeah, and so how did film, so you've been doing that for 11 years. When did you start getting actually into sort of making films more professionally? And is that something you do now in like in your spare time? If you, I'm assuming you're working full time now for the last 11
yeah,
years.
Well, so what I do is how I got into filmmaking professionally, it goes back to something you just asked about death. I actually went to school to be a mortician. Mm. And I went in like 2016, and the program was kind of rough. I ended up having to start over. So I didn't like really graduate the program until 2018 because it was like a crash course. But thankfully, I was able to get through the classroom part. And for 7 months, I was going back and forth to school to pass the exit exam. And so I'm like, well, for whatever reason, a lot of people that go to school for mortuary science end up not really even working in the field. Mm. So I was working in the field, but I was struggling to pass the test, you know. So what happened was that, like, maybe I should go back to school. So I thought about going to plumbing and all that stuff because my family's in that business. But then I thought about it, and I'm like, okay, if I'm going to go back to school, I'm going to go back to school for something that I actually enjoy doing. So I thought about it, and I prayed, and I said filmmaking. So I went to film school in 2018. Right when I went to film school, I ended up passing the art side of the test, which is the funeral director side. And then I went to film school and graduated. And like right before I graduated, I had already made like 14 shorts before I even graduated film school. Because like, again, you know, time doesn't wait for anybody. So that's kind of been my motivation.
Oh, nice. Yeah. And so, and I briefly know you've got some, I'm not sure if it's a career or a hobby. How does wrestling intertwine with all this?
So, well, wrestling came into the picture was like right when I, like, well, some, like, I've been out of film school for 2 years now. You know, I began to want to make more documentaries. And I wanted to make a documentary about wrestling. And so what happened was that I reached out to CSW, Steve Boz, because, you know, it's not every day you come across you know, like a professional wrestling, you know, place. Because, you know, I mean, we all know WWE, we all know AEW now, and New Japan and Ring of Honor. But, you know, it's like, you know, like, it would have been kind of hard to probably get like a WWE superstar to interview. But come to find out, I end up meeting Steve Boz. And he actually wrestled in WWE and some other organizations, but he's very well respected in the business, and he's trained a lot of people too, and trained with a lot of people. And so, you know, I met him, and when I came in to meet him, I remember like around October of last year, I was supposed to go to like the Halloween event, but I was at work and I couldn't make it. So I told him, like, you know, I'll be at the next one. So what happened was that, I think like a week later, I ended up going to the school where they trained the wrestlers. And when I went, you know, I talked to him and everything, and he knew that I wrestled in high school, you know, at the previous conversation, and you know, we got to talking, and he's like, man, where you gonna start training? I'm like, well, you know what? I'm gonna give it a try. So I just started training from there.
Oh, nice. And how did you find it? Like, did you enjoy it?
So I found it because there's a young lady wrestler. Her name is Sky Blue. She's in AEW now. I had seen like some of her matches. And then I knew that like Steve had helped train her too. So I'm like, well, you know, it's legit. So, you know, why not go in and give it a try? And then I started meeting all these other like cool people and stuff like that. I mean, there's a lot of great up and coming talent, I tell you, you know. So, I mean, I've been in love with it ever since. I'm not going to say I'm an expert at it. I mean, I'm still kind of learning a little bit, but everybody's nice, you know.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because I have a few like similarities with your sort of journey. I started making music videos. I wanted to get into the world of film. I always, like you, when I was younger, I would always play around with the camera. Any chance I got, I'd be filming anything I could, making little stop motions when I was a kid. Just anything creative I could do with a camera, it fascinated me. And then me and my brother were like, one day was like, let's just go for a career in making videos and see what we can do. And we started with like making a few music videos, but we, with the ultimate goal of getting into film, and we was practicing that way and was like, right, music videos. And then we started making documentaries for athletes because we knew a few athletes and stuff, and was like, let's just contact them. And we started making like behind the scenes DVDs of like lifestyle, diet, training, and we worked with some real top bodybuilders and disabled athletes, all different categories, triathlons. And it was an amazing experience to film them. But some of the people we ended up working with were wrestlers.
Oh, nice.
So we filmed a couple of wrestlers, made a DVD for them for like the sort of like professional UK scene, you know, which is small compared to anything compared to WWE and them things, you know. It's one of them, you know, they do local towns and they travel around. And they've got a second job, you know, or they got a first job, should I say, and the wrestling is just a hobby and makes them a little bit of change, but they just are passionate about it. You know, they spend most of their money on just upping their equipment, the arena, better stages, things for the fans. You know, they don't really make a wage from it as such in any large degree. So we got to see a lot of that. And one of my good friends always wanted to be a wrestler. We introduced him, and then he's now trained and wrestled around the world for different people. And absolutely loves it. But me and my brother found it fascinating to go to these wrestling events because I'd seen it on TV and I followed it when I was younger a little bit, you know. But not like, not crazily. I had a few friends who were like real passionate about wrestling, about like WWE, like super fans. But I always just watched it. I always admired the agility and the actual physical practice that they're doing, whether it's scripted or not, that didn't matter to me. It was like they're still like somersaulted, jumping, crashing, throwing them, like they're doing things with their body that I thought was impressive. And
absolutely. I mean, it's a whole lot of fun, you know.
Yeah, and only done one. We ended up doing the same thing. They roped us in to get in the ring once for a scene. They said, "Oh, we need to," because we just was like ended up hanging out with them sometimes as well as filming, but just enjoying the process and making friends. Like you said, so many nice people. And they said we need two like security people. They made us dress up in like a black suit each, and they said you've got to be like the guy's personal security as he walks out, but you're just gonna like kicked out the ring basically.
Nice.
And I remember that, and it's just like, it was fun, but yeah, I don't think my body would appreciate doing that too often, you know, like some of the guys, like the bruises and stuff they had afterwards, and just from the slaps, you know, the backhand, the hand slap on the chest.
Oh yeah.
Just some of the moves that you don't think look that bad are some of the worst, actual most painful ones, you know.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because But that's where good training comes in, you know. I mean, mistakes happen, but, you know, I mean, if you don't go the right way, you can really hurt yourself.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of training behind the scenes, a lot of, like, you got to really learn to fall, you know, learn to actually take a fall and put yourself in the right place like a dance, you know, because if you're out of time with your opponent, you're going to end up getting hurt, and they're not trying to hurt you.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
Yeah, so are you looking to continue wrestling as like a hobby, or you want to do something more with it, or you're just seeing where that goes?
To me, you know, I'm kind of open for whatever I make. Right now, I'm just, you know, doing it for the love of. But I know that really, to me, I mean, what I like about it, that wrestling and storytelling, you know, because I know a lot of people, when they found out about it, they're like, hold up, you doing funerals? I mean, you're doing filmmaking, you're wrestling. They're like, what's going on? You're all over the place. But I'm like, to be honest with you, not really, because if you look at wrestling, wrestling and filmmaking is both just storytelling. I mean, it's entertainment. I mean, really, it's not that much of a difference. The only difference is that wrestling is sports entertainment.
Yeah, no, definitely. That's part of what me and my brother enjoyed so much about it, because we started making a few of, you know, like the on-screen videos for the different wrestlers. So they have a nice little entrance video and things like that. But we came up with all these plans and was like, look, you could have this so we can get the behind the siege. We wanted to make all this video. The only problem is they couldn't budget it, and we was doing it like dirt cheap, but they just could not budget the amount. But yeah, there's so much creativity that can be done in that industry with just a camera and someone that wants to tell a story. And that's what we were passionate about, is creating the story, the entertainment, you know, the engagement with the audience.
Yeah, I mean it's really nice, because like since we've been doing it so far, like we ended up meeting, like I've got a chance to meet Hornswoggle. I met Scotty Too Hotty from Too Cool. And then not only that, it's just, you know, the people that you just meet in general. I mean, it's, everybody's excellent, you know.
Yeah, nice. And so is your plan to continue the working in the, because you said you're passionate about it, continue working in the sort of funeral industry indefinitely until as long as you can, and then creating, like trying to get into more creative feature films that you can be sort of, do you want to direct the films, write the films? Is there a particular part of it you want to do if you had it exactly your way?
Yeah, well, for me, I love writing and producing. I don't really like directing that much. I mean, you know, I'm not against it, but I like writing. I like producing. I think now I have a decent amount of experience, you know, putting together budgets and casting people, doing things like that. I mean, so I mean, of course, in Hollywood, they want you to kind of come up through the ranks. But I think on the independent scene, I think I can probably, you know, I think I'm going to probably do about at least 4 feature films.
Nice. Yeah, I hope you do, man. And it's definitely now with the, like, there's a Hollywood scene, and before that was like the only industry, but just like everything now, everything's diluted. There's more opportunities, but there's also more studios being built than ever before. There's more platforms to put your actual content on, you know, other than just a cinema screen. So I think there's lots of opportunities there for actual filmmakers now.
Yeah, but I really want to focus more on making documentaries.
Yeah, and what sort of area do you want the documentaries to focus in?
I want to do like what you did, like different documentaries about different people, you know, like the stories, stuff like random things, you know.
Yeah, well, I found when I was doing it, it was a couple things. It's with certain athletes and certain sports professions, they're really keen to have more material, more stuff to help build their name, and they're passionate about what they do and they want other people to see it and they see the value in it.
Yeah.
Whereas getting funding, if you can find an athlete who has a sponsorship, you know, sometimes they will cover the budget, just because as long as you make sure whatever their sponsor stuff is, that they have the product placement, they use it. And most of the time they do anyway, you know, so, cause that's what they do. But often they will cover some of the budget, and it's,
yeah, like I feel like documentaries, they're a lot more funner to make than narrative films. I think only because, like, in a narrative film, you have to, like, direct actors and stuff. You know, you got to tell them where to go, where to sit, where to stand, and all that. I mean, you know, that part is fun, but I love documentaries because you get to actually talk to people and hear their story, you know?
Yeah, nice. In. So with all that going on, I always ask each guest, like, with the last 2 years has been a little strange for everyone, you know, it's not the normal. So how has the last 2 years been for you, and what opportunities have you found in that time?
Well, in the last couple of years, because of the pandemic, I mean, to be honest, it was kind of rough, because I know, especially being in the funeral business, I mean, you are already dealing with people at a rough time, but to kind of have to tell family, like, you can only let 10 people in, or you can't see your loved one and all that. I mean, that was really rough, you know. And I mean, it was kind of, you know, it was kind of mentally straining, even on the workers a little bit, because, you know, I mean, people, they take their frustration out on you, even though it's nothing personal, you know.
Yeah, like you're the messenger in it, and that's the one that gets hurt, because, you know, they're going to be angry. They can't do certain things. Was there an increase in the amount of actual funerals you had to deal with?
Oh man, it was terrible. I mean, it was like really bad. Like, there were so many deaths, and I mean, funeral homes like all over the world were like, you know, didn't have enough equipment, didn't have places to put bodies and things like that. I mean, it was like really bad. And I mean, the even sadder part about it was, like, you know, a lot of funeral homes right now are struggling to get new licensed directors, because, like I said, with the way things have been now, I mean, there's a lot of people going to school, but I mean, it's like very few people are passing the test, you know. And so it's, I mean, it was crazy, man, I'm telling you.
Yeah. What sort of criteria? What do you like? I know you can't tell me everything that was in a test, but what's like sort of some of the parts you need to learn to?
Well, the thing about it is this, and I'm gonna just keep it 100. Like, to me, hands-on is always different from book stuff. You know what I'm saying? Mm. Like, I know people who've been in the business since they were children, and they had a problem passing the test. And I'm like, you can't tell me that these people don't know what they're doing. I mean, they've been doing it their whole life, but, you know, the curriculum, of course, like school does, teach you all this other stuff that you really don't need. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think that that's probably more of the challenge for a lot of people. It's just, you know, I mean, everybody kind of has their own learning style, their own way of learning. And I just think kind of like the way that the test is administered, I think that plays a big part in why a lot of people aren't passed. Because you have two different tests. You have the arts and you have the sciences. And here in Illinois, it's mandatory that you get both licenses, the funeral director and embalming license. But in some states, you don't have to do both. Like, some states, you can be a funeral director and not be an embalmer, or you can be an embalmer and not be a funeral director.
Okay. Now, imagine it's not the most sought-after job either. It's not the most, like, when you went to school, I imagine you were the only person you knew that wanted to do that, right?
Because, like, maybe out of 100 people that I know, maybe the only, like, 5 other people that I know want to do
it. Yeah, I don't know a single one where I came from. I went to, like, a school with 2,000 people in it, knew a lot of people in it, not obviously all 2,000, but that as a career or a job never even was entered into anything I ever saw or anyone ever talked about.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, like the test, I mean, the test is very hard, to be honest with you. I mean, I look at it like, you know, that's the world we live in. Anything that people see as lucrative, they're going to make it as hard as possible for people. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I mean, I think that that's kind of bad in a way. I mean, I understand why they went to the measures that they did, but it's like, if all these people are not, especially like minorities, if all of these people are kind of struggling with I mean, I can't speak for any other states, but I know, like, from what I was reading statistically in the United States right now, there are only like between 20 and 19,000 licensed funeral directors right now, which is pretty bad. I mean, that's a very low number, you know? And I mean, a lot of them are either old or retiring. And, you know, and they want people to go into the business, but the way that they the procedures that they have in place now, it's kind of like they made it so hard where, I mean, you already don't have a lot of people interested in it, and yeah, then the people that are interested in it, you make it hard for them like that. Then you just gonna pretty much end up ruining the value of actually having a license, because now you're gonna have to start begging people to do it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You know, I imagine from, like I said, I can only go from my assumptions a little bit on how I think it work. I've been to a few funerals, all different. But to me, the biggest part of the funeral and the service they provide is having, say, good hospitality and good people sort of manners in how they, because like you said, you're dealing with people in distress, you're dealing with people that are going through massive loss, and you've got to keep it organized and you've got to keep it flowing and as much as possible keep people's spirits high, you know, so they can take the most from the day and really honor the one that's passing. So was that part of your training, or did that actually come from, because I imagine it comes from the people you work with that have had experience and they sort of nurture you into that, much like the wrestling, you know, you could go to school for wrestling, you learn all the basic moves, but the old ones that have been doing it for time and time will give you the actual real lessons and the skill set to make it something.
Well, to be honest with you, I honestly think that it comes, for me, it comes naturally. Because, to be honest with you, I think what you do doesn't make your personality, but what you do can bring it out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because I do know some funeral directors that are not people person. I put it like that.
Yeah.
You'll be surprised. I know some funeral directors that have a very different personality, but I mean, they got their license, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so I don't know, you know, sometimes, you know, people, even if their personality is not, like, as friendly with people, I mean, they did pass the test and got their license. I mean, that's all I can really say. But to your question, I think it's just more a personal thing and like how you look at it, you know?
Yeah. That makes sense.
But I look at it as you always treat people how we would want to be treated, you know?
Yeah. So especially in that sort of situation, you know, you're wanting to be treated just basic kindness, you.
Yeah, because I feel like in any business, I mean, you need a bit of patience to deal with people. And you know, like in the world we live in today, you know, a lot is going on. People are more easy to be on edge nowadays. So I think you need more kindness probably than we ever needed before. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely. Is there any sort of moment in the 11 years, any one service or anything that's happened in that industry for you that stands out, that stood out?
Yeah, you know what? That was one particular day. I'll never forget it. For whatever reason, we had three services, three in a row, same day for somebody that was like into blues or whatever. And I mean, it was so different because normally you used to hear like, you know, a lot of old gospel hymns. But this particular day, like for all three people we had, it was all just straight blues music and they had a band and it was just totally different.
Oh, nice.
Like I had never seen nothing like that before, but it was like just totally different. But I mean, also there have been a lot of more sadder moments. Like I remember, I'll never forget, that was some years ago, we had a service for a young lady who just had got a basketball scholarship. She died in a car accident, and I mean, I never knew the girl, or I never even heard of the girl, but you know, when I went to that church and we were setting up the flowers and everything and the family came in, like it's like I felt their grief. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I mean, when I went home, I was just so sad myself. Like, you know, it just, you know, for whatever reason, like that really bothered me. You know?
Yeah, and that's what I was wondering as well, because like I said, when you're providing a service, you're passionate about what you do, you know it's a needed service, so that's going to give you the value and worth for yourself. But taking the job home, you know, your thoughts, the memories of the day, the pain of the people that you've seen and the suffering, have you found that there's a certain thing that helps bring you that balance when you're not at work, so you don't get sort of too down yourself from the experience?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you asked that question. Well, for me, you know, I mean, at least I thought I did, but I'm finding out maybe I haven't created that balance because I ended up developing a condition, and you may know that it's not life-threatening, thank God, but it's called spasmodic dysphonia. A lot of people don't know what that is, but you know that, like my voice. It's clear then it strains a little bit. I don't know if you've been noticing that.
Yeah, and that's a condition. Some people, I just assume that's just your voice, you know.
Oh no, that's a condition. And I went to the doctor to make sure like that it wasn't no tumor or nothing because I noticed my voice straining a lot. And I started doing research and I went to the doctor and I finally found out that it was just what I said it was. It was spasmodic dysphonia. And
So,
I was doing my research and I asked the doctor, I said straight up, like, how do people get this? And the doctor said that a lot of people get it from stress. And I'm like, well, I'm like, wow. So I really kind of know where the stress came from because I mean, I'm not married. I don't have any children. I mean, I don't really have a lot to, you know, do other than, you know, just do basic life stuff, and that's not really a whole lot, but it's like other than that, I really don't have no stress.
you're like
And so
consistent in other
I know,
people's stress.
yeah, so I know that it came from dealing with, you know, like even when I went to school, like, you know, dealing with passing that test and, you know, going back and forth with the people in the industry about the licensing process, and then, you know, just kind of like being stuck. You know, I think all of that kind of had affected me. I mean, I just wasn't paying attention. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So when did that develop, and is it getting worse, or did it just suddenly one day just start happening and it's sort of been consistent?
So it's, I noticed like the last 2 years, like when I was going back and forth to the mortuary school trying to pass that test. I do remember one day in film school, and I think this was like 2018. Somebody just asked me like, "What's wrong with your voice?" And then I didn't pay that much attention to it. But then over time, it's like it just progressed. Like thankfully, it's not curable, but it's no medical cure for it. But from what I was told by a doctor that works with me, that if you eliminate whatever stress, so the doctor that I had been working with, she was telling me like she helped all of her patients like kind of manage it. Like it's no medical cure for it, but there are like some little tricks that I guess can help me control it a little bit, you know. But whenever I tense up my voice, it just strains real bad, kind of like it's doing now a little bit.
Yeah, is it painful, or is it just like there's a resistance there, like you can feel it, or you don't feel anything, or?
It's not really painful, but what I have noticed is that, like, you know, I mean, the whole thing that I get from this situation is that like I feel like joy is like the biggest part of me, like keeping myself healthy, which is a good thing. So, you know, that's kind of caused me to make a lot of life changes, which isn't too bad, you know. I mean, if I got to be happy all the time, like now, to keep my health intact, then, you know, like I'm like, Doc, you don't got to tell me twice.
No, I wish you the best with it. Maybe something can change it. I can tell you a few things, because I do a lot of different things to do with the mind, the body, to keep myself energized, thriving, and I've overcome quite a few illnesses. My love Danielle, she's overcome illnesses that were supposedly incurable, and she's now cured, drug free, and you know, she was told she'd never walk again, and she's walking. And there's a couple things that I do, like for my own, before every podcast show, so that my speech and everything is clearer and I don't run out. Similar to, you know, if you've got to sing, you have a vocal coach and they practice certain rhythms. But I also make a little bit of sounds and noise to create the vibration in the throat. But I also drink coconut oil with warm lemon water and honey.
Nice.
And that soothes the vocal cords and it soothes the throat, you know, and the oils lubricate it as well. So just having maybe, I don't know if that make it, but before you've got to do a big speak like a podcast or you're doing even a funeral direction, to have something like that, like a little drink that's got honey in it, some lemon, mm-hmm. some coconut oil, to see if that helps soothe the muscles and the throat.
Yeah.
Trying out on a regular basis just to see if it gives a little bit more smoothness. And the other thing...
You're right, because the doctor, just because, to be honest, and I appreciate you for telling me that, because like I told the doctor, like they did have these temporary injections, but I'm like, I'm not getting those because it's only going to make it worse.
Yeah, it's like a quick fix, but it's going to give long-term problems.
Yeah, and I'm sort of kind of like you on that. Like, I believe in holistic healing and everything. So, like, I don't want to do anything that'll make it worse. But then anything natural that I can do to fix it, I would rather take that route.
Yeah, and the other thing, I don't know if you've ever heard, it was something that I had never even heard of, but maybe it's bigger, I think, in America than it was in the UK. Have you ever been to do you know what a chiropractor is, and have you ever been to one?
Yeah.
Because I'd be interested to see whether you've had any physical pressure on your neck to see if the nerves in the neck are actually not getting proper flow to your vocal cords. So, do you know, like if you've got a pinched nerve and you go to use your arm and your arm would be like juttering because it can't do a full motion without the nerve pinching. So I'm thinking like when you talk and when you do something, if the nerve's not able to give the proper flow of function to that muscle, the muscle's just not firing off correctly.
Yeah, And you know what? It's funny you say that, right? Because one of the doctors I went to, right, and this is why I trust the holistic healing process a lot better. Because one of the doctors I went to was like, I think you should just go on and get the injections because voice therapy don't work. And so I went to the voice therapist. And I started talking with her. She's great because what I'm finding out is every one of her patients, she helped master it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, why are they trying to push these injections off on me when I can just, you know, hopefully be healed from it naturally, you know?
Yeah.
Because those injections are only going to make it worse.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think the vocal training, getting your voice therapy, you know, adding something to your nutrition, getting the nerves kicked in your neck, like posture, neck movements and stuff to open up your neck. I think all of them, I think you, if it only happened within 2 years, I think it's something that you might be able to fix in 2 years, you know, or less.
Yeah, but also what I learned from this too is like, you know, create a better balance because like, When I'm doing my, like, filmmaking, you know, or I'm doing something like now that's happy, right, to be honest, like, my voice is doing okay now because we're doing something fun, but whenever I do something that's mentally stressful, then my voice, like, strain. Even when I talk about it, it starts straining. Because one time, me and my friend Tammy, she's a fellow, she's an actress too, but she lives in Vegas. She came up here and we went out to lunch, right? And as soon as I started talking about work, right, she started laughing because she's like, yeah, your voice just did like, your voice just changed completely talking about work.
Yeah. Like, I think it's something that a lot of people of faith sort of have more of a concept of. But to me, life is always gifting you some form of opportunity and it can seem like an obstacle at the time until you have the ability to look for whatever gifts or maybe... Like you said, you've been given an indication to like where your passions are even stronger, where you should be putting your energy, you know, and even times of silence that you don't always need to speak.
and so what my goal is at some point, I might take a break from doing funeral services for a while. I mean, again, it's not so much the business, but I think it's the things that I went through with the academic side. And, you know, just not, you know, making sure that I created a balance because people don't know how important balance is. Like I remember one funeral director, cause like last year I went to a mortician convention in Texas and it was nice. And there was a lady, and you know me, I'm respectful. Like I know everybody have a point of view, but there was one lady that stood up in front of everybody and she's like, you know, there's no such thing as a balanced life. And I was saying to myself, I kind of could see where she was going, but I was saying to myself, well, I wouldn't say there's no such thing. I just believe that you have to create it. You know,
yeah.
you have to create that, because if you let anything consume your life, if you don't have that balance, you can end up causing yourself a lot of mental strain, and being strained can affect people in very different ways. Like for me, it touched my voice. I mean, it hits everybody differently.
Yeah. No, I think always being on a pursuit of balance is an important thing. Like you said, it's maybe not something you're going to always be gifted with, but it's something you can pursue.
Yeah.
And there's moments where you can feel it and notice it. You know what I mean? And it's a balance of, like you say, your mind, your body, your faith, your life, your relationships, like in everything, you know? Once you just put this the sort of concrete idea that, oh, there is no balance, then you're just going to be accepting every turmoil and feeling the pain, not looking for the opportunity.
Yeah. And you know, it's just one of those things. Like, you know, I mean, it is what it is. But like I said, you know, never just go with the quick fix.
No. No.
It would do a lot more damage to you later.
Yeah, maybe you can get some extra work working on the other side, a bit more into life, something to do with birthing or christening or something at the beginning parts of life. Maybe that'll help balance you out instead of the ending of seeing people enjoy, you know, people bringing a life into the world and being joyful. Maybe something like that.
And then you know what else I think kind of added to it. Like, I mean, I'm just being 100. Like, one thing about me, try to be real with people, and that's that. Like we talked about earlier, like when you look at the state of the world now, people have gotten very difficult to deal with. And I mean, you know, it's nothing wrong with the business, but like now that, you know, like people are already on edge, and then like I think that plays a huge role in it too, because a lot of people trying to figure like how come when you're wrestling or filmmaking, you don't sound like this, but then when you're at the funeral home, you sound like, and some people thought I was doing it on purpose. And I'm like, if you think about it, you know, as they say, some things are obvious, like it's nothing personal, but you know, you can't let anything get in the way of your health, you know, because I put it like this, like I work in a funeral home, so you know, our life goes on without people, but you know, I'm gonna try to stay as long as I can.
I wish you all the best with it, and be interesting to follow and see where it goes. Do you put content online, whether it's your wrestling, your filmmaking? Is there somewhere where people can check out what you do?
Yeah, so pretty soon I will start posting more wrestling content, you know, once I kind of develop a little more. But you can find my film work on Vimeo, Wade Filmmaker 777. So Wade Filmmaker 37 is on Vimeo. And then I'm on Instagram. Feel free to reach out, Wade Jedi 99, because I'm a huge Star Wars fan. I mean, that's one of the things that got me into filmmaking too.
Okay. Nice. So I'll make sure I'll put them in the description so people can go check out your work. We're coming to the end of the show. It's been great to hear your story, and thank you so much for coming on. Do you just have a moment of time just for some simple sort of one-answer questions I ask all the guests at the end of the show?
Oh, perfect. Let's do it.
Yeah, so if you had to choose one, a cat or a dog?
A cat.
Yeah. What's your favorite color?
Black.
Yeah. And in the simplest possible term, what excites you, motivates you?
You know, just joy. You know, just thinking about God and joy.
Nice. And what does the opposite? What gets you down? What turns you off?
I think what gets me down is taking up too much of my time. Like not anything that's straining that takes up too much of my time is what gets me down.
What sound or noise do you love?
Oh, that's a good. Well, to be honest, I love the sound of music, of good music rather.
And what sound or noise do you not love so much?
Cicadas.
What cicadas?
Oh, well, I don't know if you heard cicadas, but those are like these little bugs that be buzzing all the time in the summertime.
Okay, maybe because I'm in Spain, there's a certain type of bug that comes like at the end of summer that really buzzes like crazy loud, and
I
they hang out in
mean,
the
maybe they
trees.
call some. Yeah, maybe they call something different there, but we call them cicadas, and they're very nerve-wracking.
Oh no. What comes to mind first when I say, what do you love about yourself?
I love that I don't waste time.
Nice. What do you love to see in other people?
I love to see people enjoying their life.
Nice. And very last question, what do you love about animals? This can be pets or animals in nature.
So my favorite, I got two favorite animals. I don't know if that counts, but you just want one or you want both of them.
You can tell me both of them, but I want to know what you love about animals. What do you love about them?
Well, what I do love about, well, I'm gonna say this one particular animal first. What I do love about the honey badger and nature is that even though it's small, it's like it's one of the smallest animals in the animal kingdom that's not afraid of a lion or a hyena or a wild dog. Like, even though those animals are a lot bigger and stronger, the honey badger is one of their more ferocious opponents. Like a lion probably would rather not. A lion probably would go handle a zebra, or even a wildebeest better than he would a honey badger, because even though the honey badger is small, the way that his body's made, he can defend himself against a bigger predator like a hyena or a lion. So I like that he's small, but he's fearless.
Nice. It'd be your wrestling character name, the Honey Badger.
Yeah, I'm thinking about calling myself like the honey badger, but my favorite two animals would be the hyena and the honey badger.
Why a hyena?
Well, because hyenas, because they represent laughter. And I mean, I know a lot of people don't like them because they're like the lion's like worst opponent, but they're very smart animals. They're very smart.
Oh, nice. All right, Wade, it has been beautiful to hear your story and your passion for life, and your joy. I can feel it. And thank you so much for being on the show. Truly appreciate it. Is there any last words or anything we didn't cover that you wanted to say before we close?
Well, I think we covered everything, but if I can leave the world with a piece of advice, this is always my famous saying: take advantage of time before it takes advantage of you. Make the most of it because it doesn't wait for anybody. So, whatever you want to do, you do it. You love the people while you have a chance, and let people know you appreciate them, and follow your dreams while God give you the time. Yep.
Oh, nice, man. Thank you so much. And thanks for ending on a beautiful note. And I wish you all the best in your life and what you get up to. And I'll follow you on Instagram as well later so I can see what's going on in your world and your life.
Yep. All right. Thanks, Luke. And I'll send you a friend request too.
All right, man. Have a nice day
All right.
and thanks for being on.
All right. You're welcome. And thank you.
Cheers. Thanks. Bye. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Selfish Podcast. Don't forget to like, comment, share, and leave a review if you can. It really helps other people find the content. And if you gain something from this, maybe someone else will too. I truly appreciate you being here. I'm grateful for every single one of you. You inspire me to continue to create content on YouTube, podcast, and as many platforms as I can online. So thank you so much. Big thank you to my patrons out there. If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be online. If you'd like to become a patron, go to patreon.com/LukeGreenheart. All the links will be in the description. And don't forget, you can get my free copy of my book, The Self, Who Am I? Which gives clarity to identity and direction to your purpose through beautiful insights and perception. So go check that out. You can get it free at lukegreenheart.com/free. Remember, links in the description. It's also available as a paperback on Amazon. Have a beautiful day. I truly appreciate you. Love life. Love yourself. Love others. Thank you again for being here.